Good morning. I'd like to introduce Thomas Lapp. He's the owner and CEO of C&I Power Systems. Tom has a long history with Emergency Power Solutions. Please welcome Thomas.
Good morning, everyone. As I said, my name's Thomas Lapp. I'm with C&I Power Solutions. We specialize in electrical power systems of just about every type. We span a fairly broad area, from broadcast type facilities, commercial facilities, hospitals. In today's world, data centers are growing by leaps and bounds. As everyone probably has heard, AI is driving a massive growth in that sector. So it'll keep us busy for the next few years. But all the products that we carry have something to do with electrical, critical backup power or backup power systems. So it's this is just a bullet point of the types of applications that we get involved with. And again, it's a fairly broad array. How many people in here are familiar with UPS systems? And I'm talking about those brown trucks that drive up and deliver a package to you. It's, you know, a lot of people familiar with UPS and their operation. We'll briefly go through some of the basics of it. But we have, for UPS systems, we cover a range from very small single phase down to about 300 VA. All the way up to about 10 megawatts of power. And there's a lot of, the word of today is modular and scalable. Over the last 10 years, the entire industry has kind of converted what used to be called a monoblock type power system to a modular, scalable, and redundant type design, which has been very good for the industry. Pretty much all the way across the board from small single phase UPS that typically operate at 120/240 or 120/208. You can get those from scaled from about 6 kVA to 48 kVA. In 120/240 light single phase, like light commercial type voltage. Then when you go to the three phase, they're scalable from about 15 kVA to 60 kVA. And then basically, there's another block that goes to 80 kVA, another block that goes to 140 kVA, another block that goes to 700 kVA. So they're built in configurations that you can purchase a certain block size, purchase it to fit your current needs. As an example, you can purchase a 20 kVA UPS system, and that is scalable to 60 kVA just by adding power modules, and they're all plug and play. So you don't have to shut down to increase the size. And the same for the battery systems. The battery systems are built today in a scalable modular type concept as well. So they're all in trays, and you purchase the number of trays that you need for today's loads and backup time. And you can add more additional trays in the future as you add additional power. So the word of the day is modular, scalable, and redundant. The redundant part is, in all these scalable systems, you can add an additional power module that's over and above what your actual current load is. And so if any power module in that frame fails, the UPS doesn't even, it alarms and says this power module's failed and is offline. But the UPS never takes itself off the bus. It stays online. And you can change that failed power module plug and play. You can pull it out, insert a new one, never turn anything off, nothing ever fails. So that's kind of the design philosophy today. So it's been very good for the industry. Battery systems, the traditional is wet cell type batteries where you have actually had liquid electrolyte inside the jar, and that was the original battery systems. Then the industry figured out how to take that electrolyte and put it into a sealed jar, so we made what was called VRLA. The VRLAs are recombinant batteries, and they don't gas, So that's pretty much what most applications use today. Then we came out with the lithium ion a few years ago. Lithium ion changed the industry quite a bit. The lithium ion is much lighter per kilowatt of power, so it made a lot of the equipment much lighter. Everybody's heard of the negative issues with lithium ion. I mean, the issues with overheating, fires, things like that. In a controlled environment, we've never had an issue in a UPS or data center application. Every lithium ion system that we put in pretty much has a temperature management system with it that controls the charging currents, controls the temperature, and will shut it down if for some reason it goes into a higher temperature situation. So they've become very safe in most applications. So a newer technology is called nickel zinc. There's several technologies now that have been designed to be an option to lithium ion. Nickel zinc and sodium ion, those two use components that do not have the thermal runaway issues that lithium does. And also, nickel zinc and sodium ion are highly recyclable, where lithium is rather difficult to recycle. So I'm not even exactly sure what we're going to do with all the lithium batteries that are being propagated into the field today, and what's going to happen to those in 8 or 10 years from now as they need to be replaced. So I think that's still an issue that will have to be handled. But the newer technologies, the nickel zinc and the sodium ion, they don't have the thermal runaway issues, and they're also very, very recyclable, and they're also very, very abundant. So much more abundant than lithium. So, lithium ion, basically, I think to build a battery system that's like in a Tesla, I think it takes something like 50 tons of mined material to make batteries for one Tesla car. So lithium, it requires a lot of natural resources to make those. Another option is nickel-cadmium batteries. Nickel-cadmium are typically used in higher temperature, harsh environment applications. And also, some customers, like utilities, think in a little longer lifespan than most of us. Utilities, when they buy a product, they think of 25 years. A lot of commercial applications, we're thinking of 10 to 15 years life cycle of a lot of products. So nickel-cadmium basically will last between 20 and 25 years, and they will handle over-temperature, harsh environments much better than any type of lead-acid battery. So moving on from UPS, one thing that I probably don't know well enough, and I apologize for this, in the broadcast industry, it's my understanding that a lot of your UPS power systems are typically rack-mounted systems, typically probably less than 10 kVA, 3, 5 kVA. So some of this stuff applies more to large data centers than it does probably to the broadcast industry. But anyway, we handle products like modular track busway. And the modular track busway is like a product, it's like taking the panel board and hanging it above the equipment. So in a data center application, and possibly even in a broadcast, you guys use racks of servers and power. So basically, you can take the panel board with the breakers, mount a busway above your racks, feed power to it, 100 amps, 250 amps, whatever you might need, and then along that busway, it's like track lighting, you can attach what they call a plug-in unit. It will just snap on similar to a track lighting unit, and you can put whatever receptacles or power cords you want to put on it and put as many of those as you want along your busway to drop down to your power loads. So it can be a very efficient way to run power distribution to your equipment, and it also is very flexible because you can at any time move those plug-in units to a different location or change their size. So if you change your equipment at that particular location, requires a larger amperage circuit, you can unplug that, say, 20 amp circuit and put in a 30, a 40, a 50, or 60 and just snap it on. And again, it's all plug and play. You don't have to shut anything down to make the changes. So that's happening in most of the major data centers today. That's how they're running the power distribution in the data center, because it's very difficult to run power under a raised floor with all those cables. Eventually, if you've ever seen a data center floor after a few years, it looks like a rat's nest under there, because they just keep adding cables and no one ever takes out the old ones. They just disconnect them, drop them down, and run new ones. So eventually the floor becomes, you know, totally congested. I'm going to jump over another thing that we do a lot with is standby generator systems of diesel, natural gas, and propane. I'm sure that you guys use a lot of that in your industries. So that's available from about 30 kW up to 2 megawatts. Natural gas is available up to about 1 megawatt from 25 kW. And we have transfer switches of every design type that exists: 3-pole, 4-pole, isolation bypass, service entrance, indoor, outdoor, that type of thing. And then another thing that's required now by UL is UL now requires that any emergency power system, you have to install a temporary testing station for your generator system. It's now illegal to disconnect the wires from your existing generator system to connect the temporary load bank. So traditionally, that's how everybody has done it. You know, the tech comes in with his load bank. He disconnects the bottom of the cables from the breaker, and he puts the load bank cables on there, runs the test, and then supposedly reconnects your permanent cables properly. What's happened over a number of years, they've had a lot of issues with that. They weren't reconnected properly. They overheat. So now UL has made it basically with UL, NEC 701 has made it illegal to disconnect permanent power for the purpose of installing a temporary power system. So basically, now by requirement, you have to put in essence what's called a docking station that has cam locks, so you can pull up your temporary generator, cam lock your temporary generator to it, isolate your generator from the building loads, and test your generator that way. And typically you can do that without shutting down the building. Some of them even are dual docking stations, where you can hook up a temporary generator to run your building and run your generator testing at the same time. So let's say your generator's failed for some reason, you had an engine problem and it's not functioning, so it may be down for a few weeks. With a dual docking station, again, you can pull up a temporary generator to run your building in case of a power outage and test your permanent generator while it's being repaired totally separately without interruption. So it's a good way to design a power system. We also do industrial UPS systems for harsh environment, surge protection, military 400 hertz power systems. So this is a single line diagram of a single module UPS. And the way a UPS works is you have the input is AC, that is brought into a rectifier charger. The rectifier charger converts the AC to DC to charge your batteries. Then the output of the rectifier charger is also connected to the inverter. The inverter converts the DC back to AC for your loads. So a typical UPS takes AC, rectifies it to DC, then reinverts it back to AC, and that's what gives you your uninterrupted power, because your battery is hardwired into the DC bus section, and you have a high isolation between the input to the output because of the dual conversion. And most of these have a have a maintenance bypass system. As you can see, there's three breakers. One's an input breaker. The top one's a bypass breaker. The bottom one is an output, but it's also called an output isolation breaker. So if necessary to work on your UPS system, you can close the top breaker, the bypass breaker, and open the output breaker and feed your loads completely around your UPS system to do maintenance and service without ever shutting down. This is basically a single line diagram for a modular UPS. This is really two UPS's sections. Each one has three power modules, but each UPS is connected in parallel out to the loads. So basically, this is a 100% redundant UPS design. This is what a single phase UPS looks like. They're pretty much anymore today, almost like IT racks. They're designed to be about between 20 inches and 23.6 inches wide. And they're modular in design. This is a single phase 12240, 12208 system that will go from six kVA to 60 kVA. And they've designed the upper level of this. If you're familiar with now what's called edge computing is taking the data center out closer to where the actual functionality of the internet is happening to reduce the latent time between for data transfer. So they're building these micro edge data centers all over the place away from their main data centers so that information transfer is closer to where the actual use is happening than what the main data center would be at. So this type of product works great at a remote location where you don't have three-phase power. A lot of places they put this equipment, they only have the 12240 light commercial type power, but they need higher power capacities because of the application. So you can build this up to a 60 kVA 12240 system. This is an example of a three-phase modular system up to 80 kVA. So from 15 to 80, they don't really show a good picture of the inside, but they're power modules. Let's see if I get a, this one is up to 140 kVA. It's kind of hard to see the, and this one goes up to 700 kVA. But all these have the same basic design criteria. As you see on the right hand of the picture, this 700 kVA, you can put 10 70 kVA power modules in that right-hand rack. So it's scalable from basically 70 to 700, whatever your power requirements are. And then the left-hand cabinet is a maintenance bypass cabinet that allows you to route around the UPS again for maintenance. But that's basically the technology. Pretty much all the systems now are using some type of graphical interface. The far left picture at the top, they give you a nice graphical interface of what's happening with that product, with that equipment at that time. It gives you a visual of the power path. It'll be little dots or whatever that are flowing across the screen. That'll show you it'll flow from left to right if the UPS is on. If for some reason it's on bypass, the dots would be up at the top and it would be flowing around the UPS. But there's a lot of information that's available. If you tap any one of those icons on the screen, it gives you the voltage, the amperage, and the power that's flowing at that particular point. So the input, the battery, the output, all you have to do is touch the screen and it'll tell you kind of what's going on. Another modular UPS system. This one goes up to 500 kVA. They're just kind of showing you here that how the modular design has reduced the footprint over time. So you can put a lot of power right now in a very small footprint. Again, most of these are only about less than 24 inches wide. Some of the bigger ones are about 50 inches wide, but the bulk of them are very narrow, small footprint space. And here's another example of, this is more for the large data center hyperscale users. But you can modularize this all the way from 500 kVA. Actually, this screen's one step old because now we have one that goes up to 1500 kVA. So you can modularize this all the way from 500 to 1500 just by adding 250 kVA power modules onto the system. Battery cabinets, we talked about this a little bit earlier. The traditional typical battery system is a VRLA. It's a lead acid type product. It's a sealed battery. They figured out how to basically reduce the gassing of the battery. A battery gasses when the positive plate gets fully saturated. So the highest gassing point for any battery is at full charge. If the positive plate gets oversaturated, it starts producing an excessive amount of hydrogen gas. So what they did was, in most of these batteries, they oversized the positive plate about 15% larger than the negative plate. So when the battery is fully charged, the positive plate is still not fully saturated. So it's reduced the amount of gassing that happens inside this sealed battery. Then the sealed battery has a small compartment at the top of the battery where any gassing that does happen just floats up into that compartment. And then when you discharge the battery, all of that recombines back into the battery, because when you discharge a battery, the electrolyte, the acid in the electrolyte, is actually sucked into the plates, into the lead plates. And then when you recharge the battery, that acid is forced back out and mixed into the electrolyte solution. So it's one of the reasons why a battery, if you allow it to sit fully discharged, a fully discharged battery, the electrolyte is a much higher percentage of water because the acid's contained in the plates. So if it sits in a discharged condition long, water on lead creates a calcium, basically. It phosphates the plate. So that's what kills a discharged battery. You leave it sit there for a long period of time, it's basically raw water sitting against lead plates, and they calcify. And you can't undo that after it happens. So the worst thing you can do is to allow a lead-acid battery to sit discharged for a long period of time. And again, all of these are pretty much built in cabinetized configurations. They'll come in any configuration that's required. Some are 10 jars. Most of these are 12-volt battery jars. So you may have 10 of those to make a 120-volt system, so on. The standard today in the industry is like 40 jars, which is actually a 480-volt DC system. 40 jars would be 480 volts, and that's a pretty standard rating today across the board. Most UPS manufacturers use something very similar to that. This is a lithium ion battery cabinet. Lithium batteries are built completely differently. Where lead acid batteries have positive and negative plates, lithium ion battery systems are really built out of many, many small lithium cells. They're about 60 watts to 90 watts capacity. And they combine many of those together in modules to create the capacity that you need. And then these lithium cabinets, at the very top, there's a battery management system that monitors the temperature, the charging current, and all that of the lithium modules below, and prevents thermal runaway and overcharging. So, but that technology's, as I said, it's pretty safe today. We haven't had any issues in data centers in quite some time. And there's thousands of megawatts of these installed. Another application, it's very expensive to build out brick and mortar today. So the manufacturers have come up with a way to develop a modular data center. They call them pods, there's different names for them. But basically, this is a modular data center pod that it will contain your power systems, your air systems, your access control systems, your DCIM. Everything is in one scalable design. So you can implement this. If you have an existing space, a warehouse, a large office space that's not being used, you can implement a pod system much faster than you can build brick and mortar a new building. So some entities are opting to build these inside of an existing space they already have. And again, this is scalable as well. You can build it at one size, and it's like an erector set. You can just keep making it longer to handle whatever you need. The server racks are built into that. It has the hot aisle, cold aisle, all built in to that pod system. Emergency lighting systems. Do you guys use emergency lighting systems? Centralized emergency lighting systems? Emergency lighting systems are listed by a different listing than UPS. UPS is a UL 1778 listing. Emergency lighting is a UL 924 listing. Not significantly different, other than UL 924 requires a few things that's not required in the UL 1778. A few of the things are battery charging requirements. On a UL 924 system, you're required to recharge the battery to 100% in a much faster time base than you are with a UL 1778. So in emergency lighting, they want that system to be able to recharge much faster and operate again than what's required in a standard commercial application. And again, UL 924 systems, centralized systems, are available in single phase from 1 kVA or below up to about 30 kVA in a single phase, either 208 or 277 typically, or 120. And then the three phase go from about 10 kVA to 250. But I can't tell you the last time I saw it. I think I saw about a 60 kVA UL 924 system about a year ago. You can put a lot of lights, which are LED today, you can put a lot of lighting on a 30, 40 kVA UL 924 lighting system. So the typical size is somewhere between about 8 to 20 kVA typically. Data center. This is just a picture of a data center that uses the track busway system and a AB bus configuration. This can be applied virtually anywhere. It doesn't have to be a data center. The AB bus configuration is a way to get complete redundancy, 100% redundancy, without spending a lot of additional money. Basically, you're putting in two redundant power systems and feeding across two buses each bus feeds your equipment. So if either bus fails, your equipment never loses power. So it's a way to achieve 100% redundancy without going through a lot of paralleling gear and paralleling applications. It's actually a very efficient way to, at any power level, to achieve a very highly reliable system. And it's kind of part of the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. The AB bus configuration keeps everything simple. I've seen systems so complicated by, the engineers love to build monuments, some of them, and they make them so complicated that 6 months after the techs have left the site, the on-site engineers have no idea how that thing operates anymore. And I think they did a study a few years ago and found that about 70 to 80% of all the on-site power failures were caused by human error, not by failure of the equipment. Because somebody threw the wrong breaker or did the wrong thing in a high stress situation and caused the power outage. So the simpler you keep it, the better it is for the longevity. This is a picture of some of the busway systems. Again, on the left, that busway can be anywhere from 250 amps to 1600 amps. It can be any length you want. It can be 10 feet or it can be all the way across this room or farther. So, and the middle are the plug-in units. They just snap onto that busway anywhere you want to put them. Again, they have receptacles, or you can have a drop cord that drops down to wherever your equipment is. And the right-hand picture is just a picture of each busway has to have a way to bring power to it. That's called an end feed box. So each busway would have a box at the end that you can bring your feed that would otherwise go to like a wall panel. You bring it up to this, and this again is why it's kind of like a panel board above your equipment. You just bring your 200 amp feed up there, and then you distribute the power along the bus. And I've seen this not just in data centers, a lot of warehousing and industrial manufacturing is starting to go this way because it gives them the flexibility to, again, change their configuration on the fly. They don't have to call in and re-pipe and wire everything. They can just change it by changing where their plugins are. You can do different colors. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but basically it's, you can do all kinds of generator systems. Again, we provide a lot of diesel, natural gas, and propane generator systems. Diesel systems go from about 30 kW to 2 megawatts. I'm sure the broadcast industry, you guys have generators in just about every one of your applications of some size to back up your operations. Transfer switches, integral part of any power system. So there are several types of transfer switches. There are NEC required emergency transfer switches. Those are usually for emergency lighting systems. There's a secondary system called legally required standby systems, which is covered under that Article 701. And then there's an optional. So the emergency and legally required are typically life safety. The optional is actually the loads you care about the most. The government doesn't force you to back up, you know, your actual, you know, the loads that you make money on, your transmitters, your data, all that stuff. That's actually the optional standby system. So this is the article about the articles or the NEC 700. This is where it's required for you to put in a means of being able to test your emergency system without disconnecting the permanent power to do that. That's kind of what this article discusses. And it's changed how every system's been designed for the last several years, because now engineers firms are required to design to 701. And there's like three or four different parts of 701, but they're required to design this way. So almost every design now, we see a docking station of some type, either simple or complex, being included in the electrical design. This is 701, 702. As I said, there's two different types of transfer switches. There's a standard transfer switch, three-pole or four-pole, that you're feeding it with some protective circuit from both the generator side and from the utility side. There's another type of transfer switch that it's attached right at the front end of your building, and there's no protective circuit between the transfer switch and your utility service transformer or your meter. And in those cases, we build the service rated disconnect into the transfer switch. So you can solve that problem, but you build the service rated disconnect right into your transfer switch, and it takes the place of having some other means of disconnecting power. That's done a lot. It could be done a lot in broadcast. It's done very often in firehouses and small application buildings like that, where they're backing up the entire building, so they just make the transfer switch, the service entrance, disconnect for the building. There's two types of transfer switch topologies. One of them is a contactor type, and I'm sure you're familiar with contactors, but basically the contactor, it's a two-position contactor. It's typically solenoid-driven, so it can't get stuck in one position or the other. It's got to go one way or the other. And that's been, for many years, kind of the standard, the power contactor technology. That's what ASCO has used for years and some other. And the second technology is actually using a breaker design technology. We're using dual breakers, one for emergency, one for normal, and the breakers switch position. So the breakers give you a little bit more flexibility in being able to do what they call a closed transition. So you can close one breaker before you open the other, that type of thing. So the breaker technologies give you a little bit more flexibility if you want to do your transfers without losing power for that one split second each time it transfers back and forth. This is the quick connect docking stations that I was talking about that covers under NEC 700. So they come in just about any configuration you think of. Like I said, they come in a simple, it's just a simple box. It has some cam locks, and you have the breaker outside the box. We provide them with up to a triple breaker docking station system where you can do complex disconnection connections and operations using the docking station without shutting your building down. So there's a lot of configurations, but a lot of times we'll see a dual breaker system, one that allows you to run a load bank and a temporary generator at the same time. Again, this is kind of like your simple version where you just have your permanent generator with cam lock load banks, and that's about the simplest that you can go to. And this is the one that allows you to have a load bank connection and a temporary generator at the same time. Similar design. So, and this one actually has the automatic transfer switch built into the docking station. We've supplied a number of these in the past recent time since 701 became a thing, where you actually build the docking station and the transfer switch in one enclosure. So you don't have to wire from this enclosure to that enclosure. It shows up, it's prepackaged, it operates as it should right off the bat. You've got your input and output, and that's all you have to do. Just a picture of a large diesel system, large natural gas, diesel. This is in downtown Chicago, where you have to put a gated so it's not completely stripped and stolen and taken away overnight. So the generator systems, the diesel systems, there's quite a number of engine manufacturers that make engines for diesels. I mean, you know, you're all familiar with Caterpillar makes some engines, Cummins makes some engines, you have John Deere, Volvo Penta, Perkins, FTP. There's a bunch of manufacturers that make engines that operate under diesel operation. Natural gas, it's not so much. Natural gas in the United States, there's only one spark-fired engine manufacturer inside the continental United States, and it's a company called PSI. They've been in Wooddale, Illinois for many years. They were just smart enough to move one of their major locations right across the border into Wisconsin. So they just opened a huge facility. If you're coming up 90, just after you cross over into Wisconsin on the left, PSI has a large facility now there. But they're the only spark-fired engine manufacturer in the U.S. So I don't care who you're buying a generator from, almost everybody uses PSI unless they're buying something from offshore. So there's a few offshore manufacturers that also make them, but these guys are the only ones that make them in the U.S. And they have about, you know, again, they're supplying pretty much to everybody. Generators are an erector set. You know, it doesn't matter whose you buy. It's an engine, it's an alternator, and it's a control system. So, and other than that, it's a battery charger and a block heater and some other ancillary stuff. But there's three main components to a generator, and it's the engine, alternator, and the control unit. And so almost everybody uses most of those same three components, and they just package it slightly different. Some package it in steel enclosures, some in aluminum. Then you have different sound level applications. Like this is considered a level 2 sound application. It's got an upward scoop on the right, so the exhaust air goes up, and the intake basically draws in from the left side. So this can be put just about anywhere because it draws in and blows the air straight up, and it also is fairly quiet. We have a lot of other things like voltage regulators. We have voltage regulators in virtually any size. I mean, again, down to small single phase, up to 2,500 kVA front end of a large manufacturing facility voltage regulator. Industrial UPS is designed to operate on a 25 plus year basis. So again, industrials are kind of like utilities, because utilities are industrials. And they're thinking in a 25-year lifespan. So the components that are used in an industrial UPS are designed for a much longer lifespan. And they also may be in harsh environments. So we build UPSs with built-in air conditioning, heating, NiCad batteries, and a lot of things that they're designed to operate at 50 degrees C instead of the standard 40 degrees C that's commercial. So industrial UPS, we built them and shipped them up into Alaska for the pipeline, and they had to survive, I don't know what it was, 70 or 80 degrees below zero. So can design just about anything for the requirement. And some of it's harsh environment because it's a chemical plant. We've put a lot of equipment into water plants, like in the Chicago water plants. You say, why are they harsh? Well, there's a lot of chlorine, airborne chlorine. And chlorine just basically will destroy electrical components. So we build them with special filtration systems. We conformally coat the PC boards, so basically the chlorine can't get to the electrical part of the PC board. They're basically dipped and coated. So there's a lot of things you do depending upon the environment to provide a product that'll last the lifetime that the customer is expecting. This was another custom project that we did for the VA. This is a power system built out into their parking lot to power their communications, their security systems, and you know, it's just built into an aluminum enclosure with an air conditioner heating on the side, that type of thing. So there's a lot of things you can do to fit what the customer requires. Surge protection is another important part of just about everything that we do electrically. And again, just like UPS has become, the order of the day is modular and scalable. Surge protection is not necessarily on the scalable side, but modular, virtually every surge protection device now are available in modular designs. And the reason they're in modular designs, they cover all three phases, A, B, C, typically A to neutral, B to neutral, C to neutral, also A to B, B to C, and C to A. So you're covering seven modes. With the modular type surge protection units, if you do have a failure, you can basically open up the box, pull out the module that's failed, insert a new module, and turn it back on. If you have a monoblock type surge protection unit and a section of it fails, what do you have to do? You pull it off the wall, you throw it away, and you buy a new one and stick it on the wall. That typically takes, what's the lead time today? 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks? Depends on the size and the type, but that can take up to 2 months to replace a surge protection unit. With the modulars, you maintain a spare module in stock, and if something fails, you take a hit and it alarms. It says, hey, my A to B failed. You just pull that one out, slide a new one in, turn it on, and you're back and running. So even surge protection has become a field repairable type device today. Not in the electrical world, but if you have any requirements for leak detection monitoring, you can have spot detectors, but you can also have what they call direct read. Direct read basically can go along a pipe or any distance, and we can tell you within a foot of where the leak touches the sensing cable. So basically, you can again either have it on a spot detection, or if you have a long section of something, you can do a direct read and it'll tell you where the leak is. Monitoring systems. I know the last guy up had a lot of monitoring stuff. This is another monitoring application that's designed for any environments that you can think of. It'll do power. It'll do mechanical systems. It'll do volumes, any of that stuff as well. And it's expandable. And today, again, they make a system called Wing. All the sensors are built on a wireless platform. So you don't have to hardwire all around your building anymore to get temperatures, humidities, any kind of pressures, whatever you need, digital analog inputs. All these are available in wireless configuration. So you put in the base unit, which looks like that. And then pretty much all of your sensing units can be wireless sensors. They have additional antennas if it has to go a longer distance, that type of thing. But you can do just about anything. This is the water leak detection cable type stuff. It'll run any distance that you want it to run. There's so much. The rest of it is really, facility integration, a lot of other things that there it is, text request. So that's pretty much it. Hope you got some value out of this. We have a booth in the display area. If you want to pick up some information or know anything more about a specific item, we have samples of some of the small lithium UPS in there, if that's of interest. We have a very small 600 VA and I think a 3 KVA inside there. So if you have a chance, stop by the booth. I'll be happy to spend a few minutes talking about whatever you might need. Again, I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a good rest of the show.